Finding Our Way is proudly sponsored by Berghaus, who are committed to sharing their passion for the outdoors with people from all backgrounds. Just a heads up, this episode involves a conversation about inequalities linked to gender and ethnic minority communities. For more detailed information, have a look at the episode description. Hello and welcome to Finding Our Way, the new podcast from the British Mountaineering Council, or the BMC. I'm Marianne O'Hotter.
And I'm Cress Allwood. This podcast is about diversifying the voices we normally hear talking about the outdoors. So, in each episode, we'll be chatting to someone who's usually busy climbing, mountaineering, or walking.
And instead, we're going to grill them about the highs, the lows, and the most surprising things they've learned from their adventures. So expect good chat, memorable stories, and hopefully bursts of inspiration from people who are making real change happen. So, Cress, who's on today?
Joining us today is a woman who's by day an outdoor youth and community worker, but at all times a huge advocate for facilitating outdoor experiences to engage and inspire. And she's also an ambassador for the outdoor brands Ellis Brigham and Sprayway. As an outdoor instructor, a youth worker and community leader in the Peak District in Greater Manchester, she says that young people are the future and helping them enjoy the outdoors creates happy, courageous and resilient leaders of tomorrow. This makes her smile every day. Connecting with us from Greater Manchester, welcome, Rena Yassine.
Hello. Hello.
Hi, guys.
Thanks for joining us.
So tell us, Rena, you haven't always been outdoorsy, have you?
No, I haven't actually. And this takes me on to, I guess, the story of how I was actually exposed to the outdoors. And that was actually within my teenage years. I was introduced to a local youth project. And I just remember thinking, oh gosh, no, that's so not for me. That's so uncool. I don't know why I had that perception of, you know, 16-year-old going to a youth project just seemed really uncool. But I think it was out of sheer boredom. And I just thought, do you know what? What have I got to lose? I don't really have anything else I'm doing. I've got nothing else to engage with. Let me just go and I might surprise myself. And I remember getting there and I was just in complete awe. Like, I didn't know projects like that existed. They had all sorts of activities going from, you know, local youth forums to drop-in sessions. And then the thing that really got my attention was the outdoor pursuit sessions. So they had regular camping trips. We had the Three Peaks challenges. We did weekly climbing clubs to Manchester Climbing Centre. And then the thing that was really exciting was an opportunity to go to Morocco and climb Mount Toubkal came about.
Wow.
I think most listeners will probably know that Toubkal is the highest Atlas mountain. And it was extremely, extremely exciting. The thought and the prospect of, you know, young people from Ashton, underline, being able to go to Morocco and climb this highest, the highest Atlas mountain. It was dead exciting. Obviously, there had to be some level of fitness about you. You couldn't just go, you know, without training. And that takes me on to my first ever hill walk, which was absolutely, and I don't want to swear because I'm so bad at that, but the worst experience. And my first ever hill walk was shocking. My boots didn't fit. I got blisters. I didn't know if I was hot, if I was cold. My body regulation was all over. And I've still got a bit of a potty mouth, but I remember just swearing at Adnan, who was my youth worker, the whole time and be like, no, how about coming to Morocco? Da-da-da-da-da. We got to the top of this hill and, you know, I got my boots off. Sheer frustration, threw them at Adnan's direction. I still apologise to this day because I always say it wasn't at you, it's just because you had brought me here and I really hated it. So I just remember just sheer frustration thinking, and I didn't say the words, but in my head all I was thinking was, my Pakistani body isn't made to climb hills. That's why I can't see no one else like me around here at the moment. Who else would do this? He used his reverse psychology on me like he does and was like, Rena, just put your boots back on. If you don't want to ever come to youth club again, I completely understand. If you don't want to come to Morocco, completely get you. We won't ever talk about this again. I said, yeah, you're right. We won't ever talk about it. Put my boots on, marched off this hill. And I remember I had the best night's sleep ever. And I always say it must be because that was the most exercises I've ever had. And then I rang him the next day and I'm like, so where are we going next? And he started laughing. And he was like, oh, I need Carl. And it was like, the only way I can describe it is something clicked in my head and my heart. And I thought, actually, I'm still stood, still here, didn't die. And in hindsight, I had a good night's sleep. It was actually all right then, wasn't it? And I've been hooked ever since. 10 years later, I'm still here doing it full time. So,
wow.
Yeah. It's something, I always say, it's something I had to learn to love. I wasn't born doing it. It was, I had to learn to love the outdoors.
As a youth worker, have you had that experience with young people that you've worked with where they're throwing their boots at you now?
Yeah, well, it's not been to the extent of actually having boots thrown at me. However, not too far off, to be honest. I've had a bit of swearing, I've had tantrums, I've had tears. But do you know what's beautiful about the whole situation is I can completely empathise with them, and all I've got to do is tell them my story of how I hated my first walk, and they're like, what? But you seem like you know what you're doing, and you seem like you're having loads of fun and you're enjoying it. And I'm like, but a few years back I wasn't. And sometimes I have to remind them that sometimes I still struggle, and I don't always enjoy it, and that's part of it. And then, you know, we go link arms hand in hand and go up this mountain together. And to be honest, it's such a nice feeling. And they get to the top and they're like, oh yeah, we did it. And but no, thankfully I've not had boots thrown at me, but it's not been far.
So it sounds as if your love of walking actually stemmed, you know, from those teenage years and your engagement with the youth club rather than from any other influences. Is that right?
Yeah, that's completely correct. My exposure happened through the Youth Project. If it wasn't for the Youth Project, I wouldn't know. I always say that growing up, I didn't know about the terms of the great outdoors, or, you know, that had no significance to me whatsoever. Our version of the outdoors was just playing outdoors till the street lamps came on my scooter and the bikes and stuff. And the street lamps came on and we knew it was time to come in because it was dinner time and I was going to get in trouble off my mum if I didn't get in. And that was it. I didn't know that people went hill walking. I didn't know people went climbing and canoeing. I didn't know things like crags and climbing walls existed. Till I went to youth club, I went to, you know, Spy, and that's when I found out there was so much like local of Manchester Climbing Centre. I didn't know it existed. I didn't know the Peak District was like half an hour, 45 minutes away from me. And I was like, what? So yeah, it was through the Youth Project that I had the exposure.
And do you think perceptions within the community, or I guess perspectives or horizons, have changed within your community since you were a teenager to now? Is there more of awareness, perhaps even fueled from the lockdown of the last year? Have more people found those outdoor resources, those places that they can go?
I've noticed that, like, the outdoors is just a part of Ashton now. And I know that just sounds crazy, but, well, our project is not just a youth project. It's a youth and community project. So the wider community is very much at the heart of what we do. We don't just work with young people. We work with their families. So we take, you know, we have a thing which is known as a family residential every year. Well, for the last 4 years, and families of our young people and the wider community of Ashton, we take them from Ashton to the Holliford Centre, which is our outdoor centre in the Peak District in Castleton. And for some people, it's their first time away from Ashton. For some families, it's their first ever holiday because they don't have a luxury of going abroad. And it's their first time with their families and their children, and their parents going away, first time in the countryside. Some children, first time ever seeing sheep and cows, they didn't know they existed so close to Ashton. And now that's just become part of almost like a rite of passage. Is that the way you can describe it? Where they think, oh, we know Castleton now. We know the Peak District because of Ashton Youth Club, or Lindley has taken me to these places. So, oh yeah, I very much know about them.
And that's the Lindley Educational Trust.
Yeah, so that's the outdoor charity that I work for. So we've got Lindley Educational Trust. They're a 55-year-old outdoor charity based in the Peak District, and they run two urban youth projects. So one is Ashton Youth Club, which I am the project manager of, and one, Pitsmoor Youth Club, which is in Pitsmoor, Sheffield. And so it's really niche, the work that we do, because it's like incorporating and using the outdoors as the main tool of engagement with young people through our youth work. So we can bring the two together, the youth work and the outdoors, and it's the best thing if you ask me. So as I would say, outdoors has very much become part of Ashton, and people know more about the countryside because of our youth project and the wider work that we do. And I think especially throughout COVID, we've not necessarily been able to go very far out. And so We've had to do like local walks, and now I see the young people who we're taking on walks, they're taking their families to places that they didn't even know existed on our doorstep. And it's just been really beautiful to see that.
Wow.
That's great, isn't it? So, you know, there's the ripple effect of building confidence, which is hugely empowering for everyone.
Absolutely. It's just ownership, isn't it? You're giving them the ownership. It's like, this is the knowledge, because I think knowledge is power. And if you don't have the knowledge, you don't feel empowered. This is the knowledge. These are the places you can go. You are allowed to access these lands. You know, there's this the local place called Hartshead Pike, and that's just like 10 minutes away from my home. There's so many different routes up to the pike, and there's these open fields, and people didn't even know they could go through those fields. So when I say that knowledge is power, people finding out that actually you can go through that, and then all of a sudden you feel like, wow, I'm in the countryside. I'm not just going up that footpath that's just there. I'm going through the open fields. Feels like I'm in the Peak District. Doesn't feel like I'm in Ashton or just leaving Ashton.
Your family's British Pakistani.
Yeah.
How diverse is the community that you work with? Are most people from with Pakistani heritage, or are there white families as well? What's the kind of mix?
People are always saying, oh, we need people from more ethnic backgrounds. And I'm saying, I need some white people to join my project because I don't have any. No, so based on demographic and all that, we are based in the St. Peter's ward of Ashton-under-Lyne, and that is predominantly South Asian. So we have Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Indian. We also have some West Africans that have recently started joining our project, and the Bhutanese community as well. There's quite a large Bhutanese population in Ashton, which if it wasn't through this project, I didn't know that the Bhutanese community existed. I didn't know the West African community existed in Ashton, to be honest. And it's through partnership work and all that stuff that we've been working quite closely with these other communities as well, but mostly South Asian.
So do you think it makes a difference that, you know, being South Asian and, you know, you can get to know the families and you speak the language and they know you, so you're not seen so much perhaps as an outsider? How relevant is that to you?
Extremely relevant. And I always say, I don't just work with young people, I work with their families. I have to work with their families or the work with the young people. It's like secondary, if you like. If I don't know the families, if I don't know parents, if I don't know siblings, then I don't think that it's, and my work is successful. So I have to work with parents. I have to be able to, when parents are coming to me and they speak in Urdu and they're saying, Rena, where's my daughter going? I'm nervous, I'm worried, and I'm speaking to her back in the mother tongue, and I'm explaining to her and I'm trying to console her and say, we're going to the Peak District, we're going climbing, she's going to have an amazing time, showing pictures. And then the mum's like, oh wow, that looks really good. And then next thing you know, 2 days later, she's saying, can my daughter come out next time? When's the next trip? So that is how I'm building relationships and rapport. It has to come through that community. I have to be part of that community, and I am part of that community, and that's why the work is so successful. I always say, if a white person was to come into my community and say, I want to take you hill walking, it's not going to happen. People, young people, parents are going to be like, no thanks, unless you've spent time building relationships within that community and they know you. Otherwise, it just doesn't work.
I'd imagine some of our listeners are those white outdoor enthusiasts or outdoor professionals who are kind of saying, you know, I want to be an ally. I see there's a lack of diversity in people engaging with the outdoors. I want to be part of the solution. What would you say that they should do? How do they find their Rena to partner with? Because I'm assuming not every community has someone as awesome as you.
Thank you. I'll take that as a compliment. But I think there are community leaders. There's always going to be community leaders. They don't necessarily have to be outdoor leaders. So I will always class myself as a community leader rather than an outdoor leader will come secondary. You can look at the local mosques. You've got the places of worship. You've got the community centres. You've got all these different places who have community leaders. So the work that we're doing now with the West African groups and with the Bhutanese groups, they didn't know about the outdoors. I basically went and found their group leaders, their community leaders, and I was like, oh, hi, I'm Rena, this is the work I do. do you have young people as part of your group? Would they like to come climbing with me? And they were like, what? And the only way I could then introduce the outdoors was just building relationships and rapport with the community leaders first. Does that make sense?
It does, yeah, but I absolutely. Still think there's some good advice here and some top tips for, as I say, people who are, as Marianne said, classically white, outdoorsy, and they're still not quite sure who to connect with.
Yeah, I think there's got to be that level of going and speaking. I think you have to get involved. You have to find out what these people want. Where are they coming from? Do they even want to go climbing? Do they even want to go walking? Is that even something that they've ever done before? You have to build the interest and find out what that community actually wants. I think there's a lot of work to be done. And in terms of barriers to the outdoors, there's so many barriers. So before we even look at these groups, you've got to think about, well, what barriers are they facing as well? And also, it's really important to remember that each group faces different barriers. Me as a South Asian woman and my South Asian young people, they will face different barriers to a group of young Black kids.
Yeah, of course.
Or
of course.
A group of young Bhutanese kids. And it's important to remember that not everyone from an ethnic minority group faces the same barriers and issues.
That's one of the things, isn't it? That takes us to the problem of language and these terms like BAME, Black and Asian and minority ethnic groups. Because it's kind of a catch-all, isn't it? It just becomes anyone who's not white. Does that frustrate you?
So frustrating. But the thing is, you have to have conversations about these things. I think so. It's like there's two arguments about this, isn't there? The word BAME, at least that word is helping to address issues and really important topics of conversations that need to be had. So at this moment, I'm bearing it. I'm gritting my teeth and I bear it to some extent because I think at least that term is helping really important discussions take place. However, like you said, we all just get lumped into one category. All those BAME people, all the people from minority groups, we'll just put them under one roof. They're all those BAME people. Right. And I can only use my own experiences coming from a South Asian background. Within the South Asian community, we already have our own differences. Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Indians, even within our South Asian community, there are so many different people and different groups. So how can you then go and put everyone from a different minority group in one category? It baffles me. It just baffles me. I think it's lazy. I think it's an easy way out for people. I think people are seen to do the right thing and it's ticking boxes by just using that word, and it really infuriates me. So now, even with my own people, with people I work with my friends, they're like, oh, Renna's here. We are not going to use that word. Renna, what's the better word? What shall we say instead? I'm like, good question.
And I don't
have all the answers. That's what I was
just go on. What is the better word? What do we say?
I don't have all the answers, because then it's like, are we still missing certain groups out? Are we other groups still marginalized by using a different term? I don't know. So I just say people from different ethnic backgrounds for me, or different minority groups. Again, I don't know if it's the right term, but I know that way it's kind of a bit more broader rather than saying BAME. I don't have all the answers at all by any means. And I know that, you know, I'm always learning.
And the different groups that you're engaging with, so the kids from a West African background, the kids from the Bhutanese families, do you see that they have different support needs, or that there are different barriers, different interests?
Yeah.
And how do you kind of like work out the geography of all that?
Do you know what? It's been very, 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 very hard. Very hard, and they've actually really been difficult to engage with. And I think I know the reason behind that, because I'm not Bhutanese and because I'm not West African. And that's the answer. The engagement I get from my South Asian groups compared to the engagement I get with the Bhutanese and the West African groups, there's a massive difference. The turnout, the wanting to do it, the willingness, the eagerness, all of that is very different. And it's going to be a long-term piece of work to work with these other groups that are not the groups that I generally work with. And I think that that's completely fine. And I've got to understand that that's normal and I should be expecting that.
I guess it leads on perhaps to the topic of role models. And what you're implying is that if you were from the same ethnic background and the same heritage, shall we say, that the trust and the relationship would be perhaps be easier to navigate. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think so. I don't know if many people agree with me or people have different opinions on that, but I think that's what happened with me. As a young person, I saw someone that looked like me that was enjoying the outdoors, and I was like, hey, you're getting paid to do this. You're having such a time and that's your job. How can I get there? And here I am doing it because I was thinking, whoa, someone that looks like me, come from the same background as me, same socioeconomic status as me, same language, we eat the same food. That's pretty cool, isn't it? And I think that other young people are looking at me, and I hate that. I don't really, really like the word inspiration. But I do feel like other young people can look up to me and think, oh, you know what? If Ren has done X, Y, and Z, then why can't I? Coming from the same background, coming from the same culture, we speak the same language, the same religion, so many different things there. And we can relate to each other, and that role modeling is there.
But it's interesting for me that obviously Adnam, who, you know, I know we've spoken about before, lovely guy, but he's not quite the same, is he? Because if we talk about gender, you know, I know that's something you're passionate about in terms of role models.
Adnam was a really, really, really great role model for me, a massive inspiration. And I always say he was like the best male role model I've had in my life. And still to this day, that's the way it is. In terms of female role models, you know, I have my mom and she's just an amazing inspiration for me. She was, you know, a woman that faced many barriers and challenges growing up. And then, you know, she decided that's it. She's had enough of pleasing people and she's now a self-taught musician and she gets about with a guitar on her back. And for me, and she's, you know, really controversial in my community, which I love. But for me, she is a really positive female role model. And I think having that female role model is really important. And within my community and within the outdoors, I don't see that too very often at all. Especially within the South Asian community, I don't see other, you know, I mean, there are a few, don't get me wrong, but, and I think that that's really important. The women, young women can look at you and think, wow, look, there's someone else. I've been told that our women are not supposed to do stuff like that. And I've been told from X, Y, and Z in my family that I shouldn't go hill walking or that I can't go hill walking and it's getting dark now, I should be returning home, or I've got to look after my siblings and my family. And don't get me wrong, all these things happen. It's cool. It's a cultural norm. And I'm not saying that this happens for everyone. I don't want to put everyone from a South Asian background in one category, but in my experience working with different young people, this has generally been the case. We get taught how to look after your family. We get taught life skills such as cooking and cleaning and looking after your siblings and looking after your parents and putting everyone else first before yourself. And it's like, oh, it's just crazy. And when other young women or young people can see, oh, look, I don't have to, or I can still do all that for my family, but I can still make time for me and I can still do what's going to make me happy. And if so-and-so has done that and she's from the same community as me, then maybe it's not all really controversial if I go out hill walking or if I go out doing something that's going to make me happy. Even if my culture says that, I'm really crazy for doing so.
So how do you respond when a family member or someone from the community says, oh, Rana, you're a wrong'un with your Gore-Tex and your hill walking urges?
Well, to be honest, I get called a wrong'un when I'm going to family parties in outdoor gear. Let's put it that way. Renna, that's not right. Do you ever get out of your outdoor clothes and your Crocs? And I'm like, sometimes. makes me laugh. I do get it, but again, it's long-term work. Nothing happens overnight. Where we have got to now, where Ashton Youth Club, where Lindley, the position we're at now, it has taken nearly 7 years of work, working with community members, working with the local mosque, working with the police, working with the local authority. It has taken a lot of work, a lot of partnership, a lot of rapport building, and that is where we're at now, where I've got, let's say the family residential that I mentioned to you before, as soon as I put the word out for that family residential, within 2 hours, 150 beds are filled and I've got a reserve list. No exaggeration. We come back on Sunday evening, we're back in Ashton and I've got text messages from families saying, where are we going next? when can we go again? When's the next family residential? When can my child or my daughter get involved in the next activity? And that's because of 7 years of work. It's got to be long term. That's the only way it's sustainable. So now I don't get many questions or many things or say many people saying I'm a wrong-in because they know how important it is. But it's not been an easy ride. It's taken a lot of years and a lot of effort and a lot of work.
I think that's one of the things that comes up a lot, isn't it? When you've got big organisations having a kind of long, hard look at themselves and going, oh, hang on a minute, for example, the national parks, we don't have the diversity of people coming to these national landscapes as we should have. Let's have a project. But a project is never funded for a decade of investment in a community. No. It's a short-term thing where they might take a group out, you know, for a couple of events and then... What does that group do? They've got nowhere to build that journey.
No, I know, it's true. And I think I keep going back to it, but once it's become embedded in the community, you're on a winner then. So having people within that community getting upskilled, getting trained, you know, going on all these different CPD days and building rapport and building networks, that's when it becomes sustainable because then they've become a leader within their community. So they can then take their families out. I'll give you an example. So we've done this 18-month project, should have been a 12-month project, but because of COVID, it's kind of been stretched out. That was in partnership with the North Face and the Outward Bound Trust and the Shadwell Basin in London. And the idea was we wanted to create 6 diverse young leaders within the outdoors. And we picked 6 young people who I'd already worked with for the last 4 or 5 years. And they had come to our general drop-in sessions. Then they started coming to our sports sessions. Then they started coming to our outdoor sessions and thought, oh, this is pretty cool. Didn't know people went rock climbing. Started whetting their appetite a bit. And then they started coming to all the outdoor sessions. They started coming on our winter mountaineering expedition course. And now they'd gotten to a point where they're becoming resilient. They're becoming so confident. They're becoming aware of themselves. They're realizing actually the outdoors is something that I do want to pursue. So they're the types of young people that we've worked with this over the last 18 months. We've got them to a point. They've been on a leadership residential. They've done some work experiencing. They've done shadowing. And come last August, we've put all 6 of those young people on our books. So they've been working on our sessions, shadowing other instructors, helping out, putting harnesses on, putting helmets on, doing belaying, and making sure the rest of the group's fine. And they've come such a long way. And for me, that's what it's about now. They've become ambassadors within our community. Other young people can look at them, and they do look at them and say, hey, they've got North Face kit on. They've got Sprayway kit on. Where have they got that from? That looks cool. How can we do what they're doing? How come they're getting paid to go climbing? And that's what happened to me, and that's what's happened to these 6 young leaders. And thankfully, we're doing it again with another 6 that has to come from within that community. If you build on a few people within that community to become ambassadors and to become positive role models, you're onto a winner.
Oh, I feel inspired. But what do I do? So I'm a woman, I'm mixed race, but I know that I've got a lot of privilege. What is it that you would want an individual like me to do in order to support your work in your community?
I think have conversations. That's a big one for me. People are like, oh, what do I do when it comes to diversity and inclusion? It's so scary. It's so daunting. There's too much that I've got to do. I don't even know where to start. And I'm like, well, awareness is the first step. Have a conversation with someone. Find out why it is that their community are not accessing the outdoors. Find out what it is that they would like to do. Do they even want to access the outdoors? More often than not, they'll say yes, but they don't know where to start. So someone in a place of privilege needs to be having conversations. That's the initial step. Have conversations. Make yourself aware of people, what differences. You know, I had a conversation with someone yesterday and they go, oh, I don't even look at colour. I don't see colour. I just see a person. I'm like, well, you should see colour because I'm brown. That's what makes me different. Jeez. I'm brown. It's because of my colour that I'm in certain situations or not in certain situations. So Yeah.
Hello. She just gave a silent scream, dear listeners.
And Renna, I wanted to ask you, is it a pain, really, a pain in the backside being a spokesperson for, let's say, South Asian women?
Sometimes, I won't even lie to you, sometimes I feel, oh, Renna's the token brown girl. She can talk to us about diversity and inclusion, or she can talk to us about the wonderful work she does with other South Asian kids. And sometimes it is really frustrating and I think, oh gosh, can you not find someone else to do this job for you? But more often than not, I feel like by being this token brown girl, it's worked in my favour. I have helped shape the lives, the outdoor lives of so many other brown girls because of my position. I feel like I'm in a privileged position right now. You mentioned that I'm an ambassador for Ellis Brigham and I'm an ambassador for Sprayway. That puts me in such a privileged position. Kit's not a barrier for me anymore. When I was first got into the outdoors, I had like an outdoor jacket from a charity shop that wasn't even, it wasn't even waterproof. I used centre boots that didn't fit me. So I know when people say you don't always need the right kit, you can just go out. Why do people make kit a barrier? It doesn't need to be a barrier. But actually, I had first-hand experience of not having the right kit, and it hindered my experience. Whereas as soon as I've got a proper waterproof jacket on, I've got mittens on because I've got Raynard's and I know when to stop my finger, the blood circulation is about to stop and I know I need to put my gloves on. I've got my proper boots on, you know, and I'm keeping warm and I know what to do. So if I do get cold, I'm stopping for lunch, put an extra layer on. I've got all this stuff that, you know, kit's not a barrier for me. So that's put me in a place of privilege already. Our project is actually sponsored by Sprayway. So I always say we might come from one of the top 10% deprived wards in the UK, but when we go to Scotland, our kids look proper kitted out and I love it. So you can never tell, they've all got the top of the range waterproofs on and they look the bee's knees and I love it.
What would you say are the things that make or break an experience in the hills?
I think you've got to have definitely good walking boots or walking shoes, whatever you prefer. Waterproof jackets and trousers. How often do you go on the hill and you don't have to put your waterproofs on? Honestly, even if it's to keep you warmer, like a set of waterproofs, they don't need to be expensive top notch as long as they keep you dry, I think. And then a warmer jacket. That's what I think. Three pieces: waterproofs, jacket and trousers, boots, and a warmer insulation layer. Perfect. And then if you're someone like me, obviously you need mittens to keep your hands warm.
So Renna, Everest, that never was. Tell us about this.
That never was, but will be. It will be. It will happen. So, I've lost track of time, but I think it takes us to nearly 2 years ago now. I had secured £20,000 and that was to take a group of young women from minority backgrounds, from Ashton, from our community, to Nepal for 2 weeks and do the Everest Base Camp trek. Someone just asked me, Renna, what would you love to see in your community? And I said, I would love to do something that no one would ever think would ever happen. And women from Ashton, like I said to you, when the opportunity to go to Morocco came about, and we were like, whoa, kids from Ashton going to climb in Morocco. It's the same thing. Young women from Ashton going to Nepal to do a trek like that, it's unheard of. I don't think I know of one person in my community from Ashton that's ever gone to Nepal, to be honest. So that's what I secured funding for 8 young women to go to Nepal, climb Everest Base Camp, and it was just going to be absolutely amazing. That was supposed to happen last October, but due to COVID, it's been postponed. And we had all sorts of different ideas. We thought, oh gosh, we've got the funding. Maybe we can try and do some different expeditions that won't include overseas travel. We thought maybe we can do a coast-to-coast cycle trip. Maybe we can do a wild canoe expedition. But it just wasn't hitting the spot for me. I'm like, please, I can't. Because once something's in my head and my heart, I can't let go of it. And I'm like, yeah, but Nepal's calling us. What can we do? I had some conversations with who we secured the funding for, and they were like, no, Renna, I want you to hold on to that funding. You told me that this would be a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, and if that's the case, you need to hold on to it till you can make it happen. So hopefully this time next year is what we're aiming for. Fingers crossed, should it be safe to travel, we're going to get there. We're going to get those 8 young women there, and we're going to have an experience of a lifetime.
Oh, that sounds amazing. And I'm sure in your training for that, you'll come up to, say, the Lake District, and you must. I look forward to meeting you all, and we'll go out on the hill and, you know, get some days in.
Definitely. I mean, we've got our first walking trip with them again. So it's just going to be a day walk just to get the group together and meet them in a couple of weeks, fingers crossed, which I'm really looking forward to. But yeah, definitely if we're in the lakes, I'll give you a shout.
I guess you say it'll be a once in a lifetime experience, but the way you work, it sounds like actually that could be a springboard for a lifetime of experiences.
Oh, I love that. Don't make me cry. But yeah, you're right. Do you know, hopefully, even if one of them women think, do you know what? I'm going to take the next year out and I'm going to go and travel. And I'm going to go to places that I've been told I can never go to. And if that can happen, because I know that that being exposed to the outdoors has taken me to places I never thought I could ever go. Someone like me would never go to these places. And here I am facilitating these same experiences for other people. You don't understand how excited it makes me. So you know what? Hopefully that will just be, it will just be the initial push and people will start doing it again. And, you know, I am hoping to go on a test run and try and get myself out there later this year. I know, I think I'm being optimistic, but I'm going to try if I can get there, get to Nepal later on this year myself, because I need to make sure it's safe for my young women next year.
Yeah, you've got to do a recce.
Exactly. Of course.
Cress and I will carry your bags. It's all good. Okay, cool.
I'll go back. Yeah, any excuse to go back to Nepal for sure.
I've never been. I'd love to go.
Oh, you've got to go. There are loads of great places. But yeah, we digress. But Rena, we'll put some links after the podcast of some training courses that people can do, that, for example, mountain training runs. So, you know, nationally qualified skills and confidence boosting courses and awards that might be helpful. And there are some bursaries as well. So it's useful for people to know about those.
Yeah, absolutely. And I got my mountain leader training subsidized, and that was really, really helpful from someone like me. And I think people should really tap into all that. And if there's a way that you can get it subsidized because you think, oh, I can't afford the full qualification or whatever, then hopefully people should tap into that and take full use of it.
Reach out to those organizations because they might know about pots of grant funding or bursaries that otherwise it'll be hard to find online. But, you know, sort of don't be shy and ask, I guess.
Oh, I'm not shy. There's a lot of MLs that have been trained in Ashton now. And a lot more...
Mountain leaders.
Mountain leaders. And a lot of them had their training subsidised. And I know how helpful that is and their assessment. So,
great.
Brilliant. All right, Rena. We're going to finish off with our quick fire questions. This is 10 questions we ask every guest on Finding Our Way.
Quick fire questions.
Okay, Rena, describe yourself in 3 words.
Enthusiastic, passionate and ambitious.
Your favourite mountain snack.
Hot Vimto on Starbursts.
Best mountain memory.
Going up Crib Got after 5 years of a failed attempt the first time.
Bucket list destination.
Nepal.
How often do you get lost?
I usually start off lost, to be honest.
Are you funny?
No.
If you were an animal, what animal would you be?
I don't know if it's cliche, but a bird. Then I could go to Nepal with no problems.
One thing you always carry when you're out on the hill.
Hot Vimto.
What does sort of climbing, walking mean to you?
The world.
Lastly, we want more of you and your work. Where do we go?
So if you want to check the work out of the wider trust, you can go on the Lindley Educational Trust website. We also have a Facebook page for Lindley and for Ashton Youth Club. We have an Instagram page for Ashton Youth Club, and my personal page is Outdoors with Rena.
Brilliant. And those links will be in the podcast description as well.
Rena, thanks so much.
Thank you so much. Good luck with the work. Fingers crossed for Nepal.
And let us know about Everest.
I will do, don't you worry. Thanks for having me, guys.
Thank you also for listening. We want Finding Our Way to find its way to as many people as possible, because important conversations like these need to be heard. So subscribe, share the podcast with friends and your networks, and also get in touch with us. Tell us what you think. Use @teambmc on Instagram and Twitter and the hashtag Finding Our Way.
See you on the next one.
Bye-bye.
Finding Our Way is brought to you by the British Mountaineering Council and is proudly supported by Berghouse. It's produced and presented by Cress Allwood and me, Marianne O'Hotter. It's edited by Chris Stone, and the artwork was designed by Neil Arch. Follow us on your podcast app so you don't miss an episode, and join the conversation on social with the hashtag #FindingOurWay.